Good morning and welcome to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella, on a beautiful, beautiful, it's kind of like a summer morning today. We cover a broad range of topics on this show, and just last week, it appears as though the mommy wars has been reignited, you know, based on the comment that a political strategist and commentator Hillary Rosen made regarding Ann Romney. You know, as I think you're probably all aware that Ann Romney is a stay-at-home mom, and they got a pretty good bunch of kids that she spent time raising over the years. So Hillary, as you probably are aware, made the comment that, well, you know, Ann Romney never really worked a day in her life. And, of course, that reignited all these passions and intense emotions. And as you might recall, over the weeks and months, we've had various guests, including Reagan Moya Jones, who started her company, Aiden and Anae, and talked about, among other things, how difficult it was for her to pursue her career, her passion, and at the same time raise her three kids. And I think at that time the conclusion was, well, you know, you can't really have it all. Here to talk a little bit about this, and among other topics, is Heidi Yarnosian. Heidi is the president and founder of Madison on Main, MOM, Mom. Was there some? Well, I'll get your thoughts on that.
Actually, no, but it's a happy accident.
a happy accident. Madison on Main is a public relations and marketing communications company. She also leads adult ministries at the First Congregational Church in Ridgefield and is working on her first book called It's Just Not That Complicated. I love that title, too. Heidi is also married with four kids. So, Heidi, what do you think about the comment made by Hillary Rosen regarding Ann Romney never having worked a day in her life?
It baffles me how people come up with this sort of stuff. I think it's the truth of the matter is the hardest job you'll ever do is being a mom. It's easier to go to work, frankly, in my experience, than it is to do this, you know, to just stay home and raise the kids. Trying to do both, that's the trickiest thing.
But can you do both, though? Or are women, and now as a guy, I got to be very careful about what I say.
Yeah, watch what you say, Scott,
so,
right?
So, but are women deluding themselves if they think they can actually do both?
You know, I don't know, deluding is the right word. I think the truth of the matter is we live in a society where women are expected to do it all. And you know what? We're mere mortals. We're not Wonder Women. We can't do it. We'd like to think we can, but I think it just puts an extraordinary amount of pressure on people. It's just more than you can bear. And you wind up not being able to do anything as well as you'd like and feeling completely depleted and really bummed out because you're not being able to, you know, give everything your all. And back in the day before I started having kids, and I fully intended to go back to work. I was working for a big PR agency, loved my job, loved the people I worked with, loved the accounts I worked on. And, you know, I realized as my maternity leave was ending and the phone calls kept coming, Hyde, can you come do this? Hyde, can you come do that? I'm thinking there is no way I'm going to be able to serve my human family and my work family. It was just too much of a pull. So I made a decision to rework that a little bit and do things on my own. And I do miss the big Madison Avenue life and the big job, but
talk a little bit about that. So here, you know, highly educated, you know, you got the big job, Madison Avenue, and you're rocking and rolling. You're enjoying the work, and then the babies start coming along. Is that, you know?
My oldest daughter, I'll never forget. I'm standing in our New York apartment with my husband, and we're holding our little tiny baby. And I just looked at him. I said, there's no way. My phone's ringing off the hook with requests to come in and work on this new business thing. And what about this? And why have this other account problem? And I said, there's just no way I'm going to be able to do this. For me, it was really a matter of picking my spot. What is the one thing that really drives me? And for me, it was really about family. And it was about that being sort of in service in that regard. And that's what I wanted to do the most. And everything doesn't mean you can't work. It just means that you got to pick your spots and know how much you can do on the family front and what's fair to your employer. You know, if I wasn't going to be able to give them 110%, which is what they needed and wanted, and what I always enjoyed being able to do, I had to make a choice. So I think that there is a decision that has to be made. Choosing to work and raise a family, not an easy choice. But let's face it, you have to. A lot of people need you know, two incomes. But if you can find a way to make that money that's flexible, that enables you to be the mom that you want to be, have the time with your kids that you want. I mean, every single day, I thank God that I have the ability to have flexibility so I can be with my kids, because stuff comes up for them every single day. And I didn't want to miss it. And I don't get a do-over on that. If it's over, when they're grown up and gone, that's it. I didn't want to miss my shot.
So you had a there had to be some kind of a shift. And I'm thinking that, you know, number one, so now you make a conscious decision to leave, you know, the big prestigious firm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leave the whole and everything that kind of goes with that. That because, you know, I'm sure that, you know, relative to ego and ego needs, that there's.
Huge.
You know, that's got to be important, too.
Absolutely.
So now you've got to shift that. And I'm also thinking that you may, at least initially, in terms of compensation, in terms of income, there's going to be a little bit of a drop there. So what I just want to make sure I've got this straight. You're saying that you didn't just decide to up and quit and now you're gonna stay home and raise your kids. You opted – there was another option for you in a certain respect, right?
It started – well, I was doing just freelance work, but it was the beginnings of Madison on Main Communications, because I thought, you know, I love my work. I still love what I do, but I couldn't do it going into Manhattan because, you know, think about it. If I'm commuting from Connecticut, spending at least 10 hours a day, there's just no way to be able to juggle that and still be there for your kids. So I started to do my own very, you know, small, concentrated practice. And I just thought, that's just the best way that I can do it. So, and even with work, I decided, what do you really want to do with work? What is your goal? And that is to do work that benefits people, communities, and the planet. I really like environmental stuff. So that's, you know, that was my focus. And so I was able to do stuff that really promoted that. And it's interesting because once you get clear about what it is that you want, it starts to fall into place. But you have to be pretty intentional and very deliberate about it. And it doesn't fall into place easily. It can be a hard road. And I will tell you, I will confess, when I left New York and all, I mean, because that's an exciting life. When I left all that and my friends in the city and we moved to Connecticut and I've got this little baby, I went from going 125 miles an hour, right. Mach 5 with my hair on fire, you know, to like strolling on Main Street. I wanted to jump off a bridge. I was so depressed. But it was... I knew it was the right thing to do. It just took a lot of adjusting. And I got there, but it took some time. I think the best thing that women can do is to give yourself a break. Don't put so much pressure on yourself. Figure out what you really care about most. Make that your focus. Be intentional and deliberate about that. And work towards that. And it's iterative. It's a step at a time. Sometimes it's one step forward and two steps back. But you'll keep moving in the right direction. And that's just the best advice I could give anybody on that one.
How much did your husband participate in the decision-making process? Because I would imagine also that there's got to be some negotiating, some, you know, compromising. You're living a certain lifestyle, and I would imagine again in a marriage that it can't be a unilateral kind of a decision.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that. Did you have to kind of pull out your business skill, you know, in negotiating and the compromising? Well, how did that work?
This is a very good question. My husband, I knew from like gut instinct, like way at the seat of your soul, I knew that I wanted to be a fully engaged, really present mom. Not to say that if you worked full time, you can't be that, but I just know myself and if I was ever called to do anything, it was the mom thing. So I knew that. And I kept trying to tell my husband, Robert, I'm like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do both of these things. It's sort of like preparing him as time went on. And it was very interesting because we relied on my income quite a bit. And, you know, he kept saying, you can do it, Hyde. You can do it. You know, sort of giving me that old, you know, pep talk. But it was very interesting because when he started to see the tension it was causing and the pull on me, and that, like I said, that day we were standing in our living room looking at this beautiful, perfect baby, and he got it. He was like, you're right. There's no way. And it wasn't like we didn't have a good childcare situation. His aunt was going to be taking care of our daughter. So it wasn't even like, you know, we had family who was going to do this.
So you're not dropping off your baby to
a daycare center, which is a harder choice than having family do it, mm-hmm. for sure. But you know what? We both, you know, what I'm grateful for is that he really heard me and knew that I really wanted to be that kind of mom that was just, you know, all in with my kids. And he wanted that for our kids too. So we definitely took a huge financial hit, no question. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, now our oldest is at Syracuse University. She's 18. We've got a 17-year-old who's starting to look at colleges, a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, three girls and a boy. And they are amazing kids. And just to be able to have witnessed them growing up, I mean, not just, I don't know, sometimes I just feel like they were more of a gift to me than anything else, you know. So it's almost selfish that I chose this because they're extraordinary people and I love being around them. And my life is so much richer because of that. I would have missed that if I was so busy doing what was a very ego-driven choice. You know, that big job, that's living in the
very
world of
difficult
ego.
To give something like that.
Oh, because it's so seductive and intoxicating. But, you know, I would have missed some really good stuff.
So if so what I'm hearing is, and again, with this whole brouhaha surrounding the Hillary Rosen comment and regarding Ann Romney and having never worked a day in her life, what I think I'm hearing is it's not just you know, if you're going to choose the career route, you know, then you do that, or you become a stay-at-home mom. It sounds like, though, you found a little bit of a middle ground. In other words, you started Madison on Main.
Right.
But that, if I'm hearing this correctly, that was not necessarily the primary. So you had some clients, but you were still able to devote time to, so you're not doing the commute.
Right.
And did you operate out of your home environment? Did you have an office outside of the home? And how did that work for you?
Most of the time I had an office in my house, which worked out well. Sometimes that's hard because you can never escape. You're always looking at your work. And we did crazy stuff. We had an office in a closet. We had an office in the basement. You know, we've got all kinds of stuff.
And did the kids respect those boundaries when they were younger? I mean, do they really understand that?
You know what? Excellent point. And to all the moms who are trying to do this, please do this from the beginning. Make the boundaries really clear. I didn't, and I still pay for that. Because they don't know. They're like, oh, well, mom's working. It doesn't, you know, they don't get it, you know. Frankly, I go to the library quite a bit these days to just get out of the house. I am unavailable. I'm unplugged. I'm available to my clients, but I'm not available to my kids all the time.
Okay.
They're big and they can manage it.
Now they can. But when they're younger, I would imagine it's a little bit more difficult because they may not necessarily comprehend, hey, mom's home, that means mom's available.
You have to be more disciplined in this kind of a context than in any other way. You really have to chunk out time that you've got someone looking after your kids so you can devote yourself completely to work, and then you've got to have your time for your kids. But there's a balance that has to be struck, and it's not easy. And for people to say that you're not working a day in your life when you don't have a professional job is, I mean, frankly, just wrongheaded. It's a very challenging job, and most women work and are raising kids. It's very challenging. And I think that we have such a judgmental kind of a mindset where everyone's, you know, it's good, bad, right, wrong, you know. And I just think that's wrongheaded of people to come at it that way. Everyone's different. You got to find your own solution. It was the path of most resistance, what my husband and I chose. But we chose it because it satisfied that primary goal that we had, which was all about family.
Being clear on your priorities. And is it fair to say that one of the things that, let's say, helped in your situation was the fact that you opted to start form your own company, Madison on Main, versus working, you know, trying to continue to work with another company, even let's say if it were a local company. I'm thinking about a client that I have right now who's dealing with a very senior level employee who negotiated, you know, working at home 2 days a week. When her children came along, she wanted to be around, and so that was agreed to. But now there are issues because the demands of the job have increased to the extent that this person really does need to be in the office.
Right.
And also it can be extremely distracting. It can be this person has more employees now. So the job has changed. And so the issue is that at one point this person could handle the working from home for a couple of days a week and kind of had it all. In other words, still had the big job in New York City.
Right,
was
right.
Able to work from home a couple of days. But now a new choice is going to have to be made for those reasons. The job has just grown so big that if this individual wants to continue to be successful in the job, will now need to abandon that work from home, which has been so ideal. We'll be faced with this kind of a choice to now, hey, you got to be in New York in the office every single day because the job requires it.
I know, but again, we look at these choices like, you know, it's good, bad, right and wrong, you know, and it's not necessarily all one way or the other. This could be the greatest blessing she could ever have to say, you know what, she might say, forget it, I don't want to go into New York, I'm going to do something different. These are those leaps of faith that you get to sometimes, and you know what, we don't pick it, we don't want to get there, but sometimes we do. So when those things happen, it becomes... there are opportunities, and I think a lot of it is how are you going to pick to look at that?
Well, we are speaking with Heidi Yaranosian. She is the president and founder of Madison on Main, a public relations and marketing communications company. When we come back, we'll take a short break, but when we come back, you also lead adult ministries at the First Congregational Church in Ridgefield, and you're working on your first book called It's Just Not That Complicated. Want to hear much more about, or actually, we haven't heard anything about that, so we want to hear something about that after the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Business of Living here at 1490 WGCH.
My name is Erica, and I swim for my best friend, Brooke.
Hi, I'm Paige, and I swim for my sister.
My name's Julie, and I'm swimming for my uncle.
Hi, my name is Brooke, and I'm swimming for myself.
My name is Nina, and I swim for my friend's mom.
The 6th annual Swim Across America Greenwich to Stanford Swim takes place Saturday, June 30th, and is making waves in the fight against cancer. Come join the fun and swim with Olympic, professional, and recreational swimmers in Long Island Sound. Swimmers of all ages and abilities are welcome. Boaters, kayakers, and land volunteers are welcome, too. 100% of all funds raised by the annual Swim Across America event go towards cancer research through the Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy, the nation's only nonprofit dedicated exclusively to funding innovative cancer gene therapy research. Swim Across America Greenwich to Stanford Swim takes place Saturday, June 30th. To register, visit www.swimacrossamerica.org and click on the Greenwich Stanford Swim link.
We swim for a cure!
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We're here speaking with Heidi Yaranosian, president and founder of Madison on Main. And if that wasn't enough, also the mother of four kids, but also leads adult ministries at the First Congregational Church in Ridgefield and is working on her first book called It's Just Not That Complicated. Heidi, okay, so how do you squeeze it all in? That's one question. But more importantly, tell us a little bit about some of these other, let's say, extracurricular activities. Having written a book myself, I know that's not just something you do in your spare time, a few minutes here and there, and also, other responsibilities like leading adult ministries at your church. So talk a little bit about that, and then talk a little – I'd love to hear a little bit more about your book, because I love the title. It's just not that complicated.
These are all connected. I've been doing small group ministry leadership for years at my church. I love that, and I worked with a group of women on Saturday mornings for I don't even know how many years, 5 years perhaps. And we just started doing another sort of Bible study, and this one I made up myself, and it is the basis for the book. It's just not that complicated. And the reason for all this is because I call these God nudges. When you have some impulse to do something, sometimes it doesn't make sense, and I mean, frankly, quitting my big job and raising four kids, that was a God nudge. That was not something that made sense on paper. It didn't speak to the ego-driven need of me at all, but it really spoke to my spirit. So it's just that complicated is along those same lines where, you know, just through life, there's a lot of bumps and, you know, bumps in the road that you hit and you learn a lot of lessons. And in that, it's been really interesting in my own faith development, what's happened with that. And the more I trust and step into that, the more that things start to unfold in really amazing ways. So I thought, all right, you know what? I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and I keep coming up with one excuse after another why I can't do it and why I shouldn't do it. And finally, I just said, you know what? I am going to do it. And so in the context of doing a small group for 8 weeks, we outlined – it's kind of a spiritual fitness course, ways that you can really get closer to God. A lot of us, you know, we say we're really hungry for a relationship with God, and we are. I mean, there's no question about it, but we feel alienated. Like a lot of my friends are Christians or lapsed Christians, and or maybe never have been in any kind of spiritual discipline, but they're not getting fed what they really need. So it just got me thinking, like, well, how do you do that? And anyway, this course is really about how do you get closer to God? And it's a relationship like anything else. You know, you get out of it what you put into it. But the primary piece is really remembering who you are and whose you are. And when I talk about remembering who you are, we've all been gifted with extraordinary things. And if we just remember that, focus on that. So often in business and in life, we try to make a square peg fit into a round hole. We need to be this, that, and the other thing in order to be accepted in society and, you know, whatever it is, the goal that you're trying to reach. It's just not that simple. Everyone has different gifts, and to play to those strengths instead of trying to, you know, make up for your weaknesses. Play to your strengths. Don't worry so much about the weaknesses. Somebody, that'll take care of itself. So remembering who you are and what your gifts are, that's step one. But remembering whose you are, you're not alone in this. That you've got someone, you know, God's your net. You got something there. So anyway, it started just out of that, out of building on that idea and really just talking with friends and family about how we've gotten through some difficult times in our family and in our life. And you know, because people look at us and say, wow, how'd you get through all that stuff? We had a really tough couple of years where my husband lost his job. He got diagnosed with a difficult blood disorder that doesn't have a cure and it's hard to manage. And then I got diagnosed with cancer, just bam, 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 one after another. And it was really challenging. But the interesting piece of it is, you know, one step at a time, one foot in front of the other, you get through it. And in that, when you're walking through fire like that, that's when you really start taking shape and becoming what you're going to be in your life. And when you start with that knowledge of just remembering who you are and whose you are, whatever you're supposed to be doing here, you're figuring it out. And this is all part of the plan. That's when it makes the adventure more of a journey instead of a really scary road that you're walking down.
So, like I said, I love the title. It's just not that complicated. I would imagine some people may take somewhat of a jaded view of that. In other words, what do you mean it's not that complicated? I've lost my job or I've got this illness. I'm dealing with this issue, that tragedy, whatever that might be. And you're telling me it's not that complicated? Come on, Heidi, get real.
I know. Well, the truth is, you know, when you're looking at it from a Christian point of view, I think the Christian church makes, now watch, a lightning bolt will strike me, but I think it makes it very complicated. There's rules, there's things you're supposed to do. You're either in or you're out. And I always had such a hard time with that. And when I was first starting to go to Bible study, someone said to me, honey, have you been saved? And it just took, I was so taken aback by that. I was like, what do you mean? And then the same person.
Saved from what?
Yeah, really. And then she said, oh, don't worry. You don't understand because you're a new Christian. And I just couldn't stand that. I was like, wait a minute. My faith is just as viable as somebody else's. Just because it looks and feels a little different or manifests differently, I still have the same faith. So it was interesting. And the whole idea of it's just not that complicated. We have three things that we're called to do if you're a Christian. And that is love God with everything in you. Your strength, your soul, all your might, your everything. Love your neighbor and love yourself. That's it. So it's not that complicated. It's not easy, but it's not that complicated.
Interesting. Okay.
So
yep.
If you can just stay focused, I've got those things to do. And if I can keep track of, you know, just stay focused on those things, then a whole lot of stuff can happen. But I have found when I keep my focus in the spirit, you know, on God and on that sort of elevating presence in my life, it really lifts me up when I tap into that. The rest of the stuff that I worry about falls away, or at least gets minimized. When I start, I kind of separate it by two things. There's living in the world of ego and living in the world of spirit. Living in the world of ego is where there's anger and resentment and jealousy and all that kind of stuff lives. There's just nothing good that's going to live in the world of ego. But that's who we are as humans. We live there. Then there's the world of spirit, and that's, I think, a more of an aspirational state, but certainly attainable. But you got to start by just focusing on the basics. And those are, you know, it's not that complicated. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Okay. Start there and move on.
So I get that. And I like that as a starting point. Mm-hmm. And I like the, you know, the word that you use. It's, you know, it's aspirational.
Mm-hmm.
I think where many people have a problem is in the translation. So in other words, translating it down to the petty grudges, the slights that we might receive, you know, during the course of the day, you know, arguments with kids or siblings or parents or friends. So again, translating that I think most people can understand that and accept that in their faith system. But then translating that down into, okay, now here I am in the moment and I'm having this disagreement, or, you know, having this feud, or I'm not finding it in my heart to forgive somebody for, again, a slight or some kind of an offense. What would be your advice there on how to translate those things that are so good and so lofty and aspirational, but down to a very practical level? How does one go about doing
this
that?
This is the really hard part. There's no question. And it's funny. One of the when we were doing this group, it's just not that complicated group. One of the sessions was about forgiveness, and that's a hard one. And so we're sitting at the dinner table, and I'm asking my kids about it, and my 14-year-old, I said, well, what do you guys think about forgiveness? And she said, you know, Mom, forgiveness is really more about you than it is about the other person. And I'm like falling out of my chair. Here's a 14-year-old kid. And I absolutely agreed with her. But that's an incredible insight. I think the truth of the matter is, if you like resentment, this is a great description. Resentment is like swallowing poison and expecting the other person to die. It doesn't serve you. You
know? I love that.
Wait. So, I mean, if you really think about that stuff, if you think, what's really going to serve me in this context? And then sometimes, like a lot of times, I've had situations where I have been so angry and said, you know what? I cannot forgive this person, love this person. You know, you're just whatever it is making you so angry. And in those moments, I have said on more than one occasion, all right, God, you take over. You love them through me because I don't have it in me. And I just lay it down.
Oh, wait. Now, wait. That sounds like a cop out.
No, nope, it's not. It's not. I have to tell you, it has totally redeemed my marriage. That's why. So it works.
Don't you ultimately, you know, if you're going to forgive, don't you ultimately need to just get with that person and just say, look, you know, without rehashing everything, I just want you to know that I forgive you, and I want to reestablish our relationship or friendship or whatever. Don't you have to do that? Again, is it a cop out? Just to, okay, God, you've got it, but I'm going to still harbor this grudge.
No. I mean, when you do that, really, that's opening the door to let God come in. When I say things like that, so all right, look, that's me saying this is beyond me. I can't do it. That's number one. But the other piece about it, like with forgiveness as an example, is when you're open to be forgiving with someone, you have to, sometimes you can't even have a conversation with that person. What if that person's dead? What if that person lives miles away?
Excellent
point. It's really a matter of you in your own heart saying, you know what? I'm not going to carry this anger anymore. So, and you have to let it go. And it's for you. That other person may never even know it. You may never have a discussion about it, but it's freeing you from, and it's work. And it's something that requires discipline, real discipline. So it's not a cop out, but it's something that you need. I find I need to invite in the big man to help me out because it's not in me to do it by myself. So the big man being God.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That does help, too. It helps in, you know, again, when you think about going from the lofty down to the translating it down to what does this mean to me on a practical level. Thank you so much, Heidi. We've been speaking with Heidi Yeronossian, president and founder of Madison on Main, a public relations and marketing communications company. And you've been listening to the Business of Living show, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. Thank you so much for joining us here at WGCH 1490.
This is your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield County.